Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable episode 139, week 5 in the SEC, recorded Monday, September 29th, 2014. This week the roundtable is packed and so is the action this week in the SEC. Shane Bailey's joined by Nick Thomas, Nick Jones of Bama Hammer, Blair Smiley, and a brief appearance from Britton Burton. They discuss the troubles at Vanderbilt, Tennessee giving Georgia a scare, an upset in Columbia, and how the Razorbacks are not what they were expecting. We also look ahead to this week's action where 6 of 7 teams from the West are ranked and pair up against one another. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is Shane Bailey, your host. And as soon as we start, we have technical difficulties on some of our hosts that are joining us tonight. So hopefully they'll join us just in a few moments. But right now, I'm not the only one here. So we'll continue on. We are a podcast that is fan-centric. We have a fan's point of view, and we do this every week. On any way that you can watch or listen to a podcast or a video cast, you could probably find us. We are on the internet at the website SECSRT. We're on YouTube, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, anywhere you can listen to a podcast. If you just look up SECSRT, it should be all you need to do to find us. Subscribe, like, comment, join the conversation, whatever you need to do. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, all those social media outlets as well. So lots of ways to interact with us and listen and keep up with what we have to say. But we do this every week, and we take a look at the week that's just happened in the SEC. We take a look at the week that's going to happen in the SEC and kind of get a gauge on what we think is going to happen. So we'll get right into things, make some introductions. It looks like we'll go right from left today on our YouTube video, Google Plus Hangout. Nick, welcome back. Technical difficulties and all. We're glad you joined us.
I think everybody's trying to watch Netflix tonight, so I need to pull a Steve Jobs right now. Everybody, turn off your iPhones. Don't use any more data. We're trying to do a podcast. It's really important. You can watch Netflix later.
Yeah, or it could be Comcast being mad at this, at their merger deal with Time Warner. And throttling everybody and blaming it on Netflix I don't know if you saw that row they're having, but apparently yeah. Netflix and a few others were bribing Comcast. You know, if they give a good pipeline to their data and their users, then they'll let the merger go through without any hiccups. And Comcast basically said no, and so now the extortion's backfiring. Comcast is trying to come out blazing guns, but you know they're the ones that's the big bad bully in internet traffic anyway. So who knows what's going to come of that? But that's a whole other podcast that most folks in the SEC don't care about. As long as we have our SEC network, we're good. Blair Smiley's joining us. Welcome, Blair.
Good to be back, Shane. I'm looking forward to stomping some Texas A&M Aggies this week.
Well, Britton's asking if my audio is bad. Is my audio bad for you guys?
Nah, you're good.
Okay. Britton, it must be just you. And so Britton Burton
right.
is... There we go. It's just you, man. Britton Burton's joining us as well. Britton? Good evening.
Good to be here. I may not be able to hear much of it, but I'm here.
And then Nick Thomas, Vanderbilt.
Good to be back.
Welcome back.
Thanks
for having me. So quick introduction. Nick, this is everyone. Everyone, this is Nick. Some of you have not been on a podcast with Nick. He's pretty new, but he is our Vanderbilt tie-in. So we're glad to have you. I guess you had to hop on. You had such a big head after – you know, that person on Facebook was singing your glory.
Well, you know, I didn't want to brag about it, Shane. I just want to give the fans what they want.
Well, we're glad you're able to join us. So for that other individual, and it might have been the same individual complaining, or not complaining, but he says, it's so much better on this podcast when you have more than two people. And so I said, you're right. It is. And so now we have a pretty good group. We got five of us tonight to look at it. And I think that's indicative of what's happening in the SEC. I mean, as you look, we are in week – we just finished week five going into week six. And that's when the meat of the action starts to happen. We had a lot of great games that occurred last week. We've got some really strong matchups coming up this Saturday as well. So we're going to get right into things. And, Nick, you want to kick us off with the Vanderbilt UK game?
Well, since I have an affinity for the Doors and you have the affinity for the Cats, I feel like that's – the best place to start, right?
It is.
So, you know, one, I would like to brag, we did have a touchdown this week. You know, not every week can we say that, although it was not an offensive touchdown. So it was a rough week from a Vandy perspective. You know, not having any offensive points on the board, Darius Sims has single-handedly outscored our entire offense for the year based on his defensive production. So we're pretty proud of that. In addition to an outstanding 139 total yards from scrimmage, which, you know, it's pretty impressive.
Those are some great stats. I mean, that's something you want to hang your hat on, especially when you come into this season, you know, loaded with talent. It was the whole thing that everybody talked about, that all these freshmen and sophomores that were redshirted is going to just provide so much strength and so much depth to this program. But what I think it's really showing is that it's bringing out the inexperience that redshirting has caused for all those players.
Yeah, talent is one thing, but being able to perform on the field, when talent's young, inexperienced, you really never know what you're going to get. It's no reason, no wonder why all these 4 and 5 star players don't ever pan out. But the fact is, you've got to have the scheme that fits them. You've got to have the cohesiveness and the chemistry. And flat out right now, we just don't have it. When you look at the strength going into the season was the offensive line, and our offensive line is getting destroyed.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't have to wheel Wade Freeback out into a hospital on Saturday for the beating he was taking. Now, for a true freshman, he stood in there like a champ, stood in the pocket and delivered the ball the best he could, which was very impressive for a true freshman. The only problem was, he was typically throwing it to the Kentucky players.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting thing. You know, ironically, the strength of our game is our running game. We've got Jerron Seymour and Ralph Webb that typically do a great job, and they can either have a loss of 1 or a gain of 12. I mean, they're averaging a little over 5 yards a carry. And for the last 16 plays of the game for Vanderbilt, we ran the ball 4 times and could not get any pressure. And anything that would require a play that would lead to misdirection from the offense to slow down the Kentucky rush, apparently that the dog ate that page of the playbook this week because they didn't use it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't understand. I'm gonna jump in here, but I watched this game for just, you know, kind of on and off. But basically, from what I observed, Kentucky just essentially said, okay, we're just gonna bring all kinds of pressure. We don't think that you're gonna be able to make any reads as a freshman quarterback, and they shrunk it all. And I never saw a screen. I never saw anything to defeat the rush that was coming. It was so unimaginative, which is kind of the same broken record that's happened for 5 weeks now. And then, you know, I saw a stat today where they had, they had 3 offensive touchdowns in 5 weeks. I mean, you gotta figure that out. Yeah, I mean that's pedestrian stuff, man. That's not coaching up your players. That's not scheming properly. I mean, to figure out and, you know, think that you're, you know, Vanderbilt doesn't have tight ends that are gonna blow you away. And I mean, when I watch Vanderbilt, it is so easy to defend. And what Kentucky basically did, for what I thought was, which really kind of backfired on them, is that they basically said they shut it down on offense. I mean, Kentucky basically went really conservative, which I think is why they turned the ball over, because it was like they were basically saying, it's 17-7 and I'm just not going to do anything to lose this game. And they played really kind of tight on the offensive side of things, because they knew all they had to do was punt the ball back, because there's no way Vanderbilt was going to score. So got to be really, really frustrating. I don't really get the offensive philosophy right now, and I think they got, you know, better players than what they're actually putting them in position to be.
Well, Blair, I appreciate your sympathy as a Vandy fan. Thank you for your heart. You know, I would like to say that we couldn't even hang our hat on a moral victory other than the fact that we did cover the spread.
Yeah.
But when you look at the play calling, it's easy to realize, easy to forget, rather, that 70% of our roster are redshirt sophomores or younger. That's absolutely no excuse. And you have to wonder, on the defensive side of the ball, how much that is impacting the transition to the 3-4, bringing in a new system. And on the offense, you know, losing your quarterback, Patton Robinette, who found ways to win last year and bring in a true freshman. How much impact of that does that have? And certainly that's going to play a role, but when you look at the position that the coaching staff is putting the offense in, it seems like they're working against their strengths rather than with them. And as a Vandy fan, it's very frustrating.
Nick, that's a really good point, and that's something that I've seen. I haven't watched too many Vandy games. Obviously, I saw the loss and up the season. But I think you're right. I think the cohesiveness of the different parts of the offense and things, like, nothing's working together. You know, you look at it, you watch them play, the game plan seems kind of off. You're not putting your athletes into space. You're not giving it to Seymour, a guy who I am really high on. I think, you know, he needs to get more touches, obviously. But I don't know, and I'm not sure if the fix can even come this year. You know, you talk about the youth, there's some things looking up, but at the same time, if your coaching staff and your playing and your play styles don't really mix, that's something that is, you know, much deeper than just game planning or just not having the athletes and going out to recruit. Because James Franklin laid the groundwork. I mean, we've talked about how well Vandy's been recruiting. I mean, they've stolen some 3 and 4 stars away from bigger programs, so these, you know, younger guys that we're talking about should be able to make plays. So I don't know if it comes down to coaching staff, if it comes down to, you know, transitioning on the defense, if we're running the different kind of offense that we need to be running. I don't know. Maybe you can, you know, offer some fixes to this problem. But I think, you know, Vandy's got a lot of problems that need to be fixed, and they're not easily fixable.
Well, to speak to that somewhat, I'm sure every other fan in the SEC other than Vandy is pretty pleased to know that Vandy has returned to their rightful spot in the basement of the SEC East. But with that being said, it's really odd because when you look at Carl Durrell, the offensive coordinator, he was UCLA's head coach for a while. He was Houston Texans OC last year. And he runs a West Coast offense. Now, there's been a lot of criticism his way before he ever got to Vanderbilt. Does that offense fit into the college game in today's world? And if he's been out of the college game for more than a handful of years, you've seen the college game evolve fairly significantly to the spread sets and how to utilize your best players in space. And he's really sticking pretty close to that West Coast offense. It's very interesting to me. I've never claimed to be an offensive genius from the offensive anything from the college game, but when you look at every team that I've seen in the SEC, their offense walks up to the line of scrimmage, gets set, the quarterback backs off, looks to the OC. The OC calls the play based on the defense that he sees. We're not doing that. And I don't know if that's simply a product of the West Coast offense. However, I wonder, are they simply calling whatever play that's called in with no audible opportunity? Or are they relying on a true freshman to make those reads and call and put us into the right play? It's very frustrating to see that and to see the very bland play calling that's going on.
Well, I mean, it's evident when you look at the number of attempts you had. I mean, total plays on offense were, I think, 47 for Vanderbilt. Kentucky had that many running plays.
Yeah.
You know, and so it is disheartening. You know, I don't have any ill will against Vanderbilt. They're, you know, they're one of the ones in the East I can live with. And it might have to do with the fact that I live in Nashville. But I never want to see them win that game that they had Saturday. But I did want to see a more competitive game. And what was weird was that, you know, I was following leading up to this game and checking Twitter, and all of a sudden there were tweets out there saying that Robinette was cleared to play. And so I was definitely fearing the spread last week. I thought 17 was a high number. And going into the game, it's like, oh, well, now Robinette's in there. And he's cleared to play. It's definitely in jeopardy. And then he was never to be seen. What's going on with that? And then it's starting to come out now from Mason and everything that all of that drama that was happening that first week with Robinette ended up being an injury, a concussion protocol then as well, that basically he was covering up and not telling anybody about. It's just mistake idea. After mistake, it seems like, on the coaching side from both offensive coordinator and head coach there.
Well, you know, I made a post on one of the sites this week that talks about, you know, you're definitely dealing with a rookie head coach. Make no mistake. And since that very first
– Oh, he's made mistakes.
mistake plural, no doubt, right? But, you know, from the initial week where he posted Patton is his guy and he's going to stick with him, there's not a quarterback controversy, and then he pulls him with 8 minutes left in the first half of the first game. Ever since, and that started a snowball effect to questioning everything he's done. Now, he's made other mistakes. Don't misunderstand me. But the fact of the matter is that started a huge, huge snowball to question this rookie coach, that every time he speaks, it's loaded with okay, you knows, that can't seem to articulate exactly the message that he wants to get across. And so after decision that gets questioned, even if it's the slightest bit of decision that could go either way, he's going to get just lambasted by it. And all because of the way that first Patton Robinette situation happened. If he just comes out and says, the guy's got a concussion, we're protecting him, and we're making a move, I think everyone gives this guy a much better starting point for error. And I just don't think that happened. And he
doesn't even have to say he has a concussion. I mean, you could say that
he's dinged up.
Yeah,
he got dinged up in the first game and blah blah blah. I mean, all coaches are vague about it.
Or you know, he took a hit. We have to follow concussion protocol. I had to take him out.
Yeah,
you know, well, that's not admitting there's a concussion because you're not making an admission that he's concussed. You're admitting the fact that he had to follow concussion protocol, which is not necessarily a quick way to get back onto the field.
Yeah, and it was interesting because, you know, I was listening to that morning, you know, 104.5 here locally, where he just all of a sudden just gave that nugget, you know, the third week of the season after the third game, where he just decided and just kind of, and it was kind of a off comment, you know, where they luckily picked up on it after he actually got off. And I'm like, he just basically said the kid was hurt and he's just basically gotten beaten up for 3 weeks for no apparent reason. I mean, I understand that sometimes coaches are their own worst enemies, but
Well, if you look at the chain of events that happened with him, him pulling Patton, him losing to UMass. I'm sorry, to Temple. Who did they lose to?
Yeah,
Temple had to come back to fight to beat UMass.
Exactly.
Now who's the Vanderbilt fan here?
Yeah, I forgot. Someone knows. I got sacked 87 times last weekend, so.
No, you're just trying to forget, I know.
But basically, that's sort of the chain of events. They get beat by Temple, then they get smoked by Ole Miss. He burns Wade Freeback's red shirt to start a game. He lets him play two drives before he puts Patton in. So the opportunities for him to be questioned, he continues to present himself and throw himself under the bus. I don't understand why he does a lot of stuff. And frankly, he may have great reasoning for it. He may have the best rationale, but the fact is he doesn't know how to explain himself to go forward to all the fans and the staff and the people that want him to win why he's doing it. So the only alternative is that they question and doubt him based on the results on the field.
Yeah, and he's also following a guy that you could never get off a message.
Right.
You know, James Franklin was always on point, and he never got off his message, and you could never get him off his message.
Except this Saturday in Happy Valley.
Oh yeah.
Well,
did you happen to see by chance who was his guest at the game?
I did. Coach Tim Corbin, the Vanderbilt Commodores baseball coach.
National championship, absolutely.
And that's, national championship baseball coach.
It's mandated that you have to say it that way for the first year. I don't make the rules of this little bomb. But apparently he was also wearing a Penn State shirt as well.
Uh-oh. Now he's going to go be the head baseball coach up at Happy Valley?
Apparently. Oh, I don't know.
Well, I did not expect to spend almost 20 minutes of the first half of this podcast talking Kentucky Vanderbilt.
Before we go any farther, yeah. Shane, let's ask the Kentucky fan, how do you feel Kentucky performed off of their previous game?
I don't know if anybody's seen the movie Beautiful Girls, but there's a scene in there where they have to set up, they take this long, drawn-out, and I'm a horrible storyteller, long, drawn-out process to set the parameters on how to rate how good-looking his fiancé is. And so I'm going to go with a good, solid 7.5. Go back and watch the movie. You'll get that reference. But, you know, they're nobody that you'd be embarrassed to take home to mom. But, you know, they definitely weren't going to be on the cover of the swimsuit issue of Sports Illustrated way they performed Saturday. But like Blair said, you know, that whole second half, did they just shut things down and didn't show you what they have, because they know South Carolina's coming up Saturday? I don't know. You know, if that's the case, you know, that good solid 7.5 becomes an 8.5 or a 9 real quick. But I just don't know. I was a little upset that even with all of that being said, that they couldn't, you know, just set their hand the ball off and score something in the whole second half of that ball game.
It just goes to show you, Shane, that when you're building a program like really Kentucky's doing, you know, I mean, I've been dealing with this at Mississippi State forever. It's never easy. It's never, every Saturday is a grind, and it doesn't matter what momentum you think, you know, and you got some, you know, a team that you consider, hey, it's on the downturn coming in. You know, all it takes is an 18-year-old kid not to give it the attention that needs to happen. The next thing you know, you got a dogfight. So,
well, I know
that's what I kind of took away from it. It's just never easy.
Because, I mean, if they shut things down, that's a lot of confidence to shut down, to know that a pick six or a fluke of, you know, a busted coverage touchdown, it's a field goal ball game. And there were a couple of opportunities throughout that ball game where I sat there and watched this like, we got lucky. And so, you know, I would like to think that I'm going to go with what you said. You know, they were keeping their cards close to the vest, but realistically, you know, you're not going to be 100%. You're not going to be able to step up for every single ball game. And so for them to be able to play Vanderbilt, not score a single point in the second half, and look somewhat vanilla at times and still get the victory in the SEC, no matter who it is, it's a win in the SEC.
Absolutely.
It's a check mark, and things are going in the right direction.
Yeah. After 17 losses, it's a win.
Yeah.
Well, and if you look at last year's Vandy UK game, if I remember correctly, Vandy won it on a field goal within the last minute, and that was in Nashville. But if there's one thing I think you guys learned from the UK perspective, is that Toles can run. Toles is mobile, and he can get out of the pocket. So that's going to present a whole new wrinkle against South Carolina's preparation for next week.
So let's talk about a game we don't have to talk about. And I know that they are the fifth-ranked team in the nation, and we've not given them a whole lot of love on this podcast.
Who cares?
But they played La Tech, and
they couldn't run.
They couldn't run.
For a while.
Yeah, it took a long time for them to get things started. And if they start off slow again, coming up this week, I don't think they're going to be looking like a top 10 team when the polls come out Sunday, and so we'll talk about that side of it later. But yeah. I mean, was there a lot to talk about from this game?
No, let's move on to the next person. Let's not talk about Auburn. I hate them. We don't even play them.
All right, let's talk about another team you love so much. Ole Miss played Memphis.
Hey, they broke out the baby blues, baby.
They did. First time since, what, the 80s that they wore those helmets?
Yeah, man. They had they hoodwinked everybody, man. Going to wear the 38 logoed Chucky Mullins uniforms, and then they broke out the baby blues. And then Bo, man. That guy's awesome when he drops back and passes. Because that game, I was sitting there going, we can all pretty much say that Ole Miss's defense came to play and were very dominant on what I think is a pretty decent Memphis team. It's like Memphis decided not to even look at an offensive game plan. So I don't know. I really can't tell how great that is because, I mean, I think you can run on Ole Miss if you power them. But I mean, I was literally watching that game going, the best chance that Memphis has is for Bo Wallace to drop back and throw passes. And that's what was happening. I mean, it was like they're a pick six away from freaking winning this game, through three quarters. But
it took midway through the fourth before Ole Miss finally.
Oh, it was Boise State all over again. It's like I'm going to throw three touchdowns in the last 10 minutes of the ball game to pull it away and look like we actually did something. So obviously a clear look ahead. I think everybody saw that coming. Memphis has got a very, very good defense. They whipped a pretty good Middle Tennessee State team and just took them out to the woodshed the week before. They went out to UCLA, and that thing was a 35-35 ball game with 4 minutes to go, if I'm not mistaken. So Memphis is pretty good. So that coupled with it, I think, was, you know, a complete look ahead. But if you're Ole Miss, you know, it's the whole thing that you've been dealing with. You've got a really, really stout defense. You got a quarterback that you don't know which guy's going to show up. He's streaky as can be. And when he's bad, he's bad. And when he's good, he's really good. So that's about all I took out of it.
Nick Jones, you got anything? You've been awful quiet there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can bring too much from this game. I mean, obviously, you can't look into the fact that I mean, Memphis is a much improved team. They're not this team that they've been over the past couple of years. But I think you're right. And one of the key questions for me is, you know, there's several things surrounding this Alabama-Ole Miss game is what Bo Wallace is going to show up. And I don't think it necessarily depends on how well Alabama's defense plays against him. I think it's all Bo Wallace. You know, we've seen him go out before and throw four interceptions, but we've seen him go out as well and throw four touchdowns and throw for almost 400 yards. So the key thing for Ole Miss this week is, I don't know how you groom Bo Wallace, but tell him, hey, you know, we need your best performance to beat a team like Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Bo Wallace is that I actually take away is that the teams that have success with him to put him into turnovers are the ones that make him play quarterback. They make him go to his second and third read. They take away his first option. I mean, if you go back to the Egg Bowl last year, he never could produce his first read. Basically, they knew exactly what he was going to do and force him to that second and third, and that's where he actually has issues. And so that's why I think, you know, this coming up weekend is just going to be a tall task for him.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Treadwell, he only had 5 receptions.
Yeah, and, you know, Treadwell, I mean, right now, I mean, Vincent Sanders or whatever his name is really your number two option. The other kid, a Boy Joy or whatever his name is, he hasn't really developed into that other option as well. So really what people are doing is they're just bracketing Treadwell. He's basically becoming a decoy. You know, and you've got the really good tight end in Ingram. So right now, I mean, Treadwell's more of a decoy, right, than anything else.
Yeah, but he did score the 2 touchdowns, and one of them was that, I think, was that a 63-yard reception or something? He had one long TD.
Yeah.
So even though he's a decoy, he's still where the production's coming for Ole Miss. Well, let's move on. I don't think there's any reason to go further into that game. I think you guys hit the strengths. Memphis, when we looked at this at the beginning of the season, I don't think anybody expected Memphis to be as strong as they are. Everybody thought Ole Miss should win that game. I think everybody was a little surprised at how close it was for how long. That should have been a game Mississippi State or Ole Miss should have been able to put Memphis away earlier than halfway through the fourth quarter. Now, another team we don't need to spend a lot of time on because they didn't have any problem at all, you know, putting them away is that's LSU hosting New Mexico State, putting up 63, allowing one touchdown. I think what we do need to talk about is the quarterback situation there.
I was going to say they had about 16 minutes worth of problems because they had Anthony Jennings in with, four picks? Not four picks, but 4 turnovers. Yeah, Brandon Harris, I think between Mississippi State and the New Mexico State game, they scored a touchdown on 9 of his first 10 possessions. So that's pretty easy call to get him to go to quarterback.
Yeah, Harris is going to be the guy, I think. Didn't let us announce that already?
Yeah.
So, you know, once they got the quarterback situation, you know, somewhat inked out there in LSU, putting Harris to lead that team, I don't know what to expect. Do you think there could have been a different outcome against you guys 2 weeks ago or last week? I guess.
No, I don't think so, because he doesn't play defense. I mean, I'm not trying to be. I was actually not trying to be funny, but I was just.
But that's good.
We completely shut it down, and we obviously hadn't prepared that much for him, and with the prevent defense, you know, it just sure. But there was absolutely no way LSU was stopping us that game. They could not stop our offense, and. But I do think this kid is the right move, and I think this is something to actually definitely pay attention to coming up in this week, because, you know, you can't really count LSU out, but if they can kind of shore up that middle of the defense, this kid gives them a whole different dimension than what they've had currently.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment.
I mean, if y'all saw the stats, he had 7 possessions and they had 7 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty impressive.
And let me add on to this, too. I mean, I know it piggybacks into the Auburn game, but you know how we've always said, I mean, Alabama's a little bit different offense this year, and it's proving to be that, you know, Alabama might need a quarterback that's more capable than, you know, maybe the McElroys and the McCarrons of the world with Kiffin now. But you look at LSU's offense, and the one thing that you're – quarterback cannot do is beat the team, you know, beat yourself. You can't have 4 turnovers from the quarterback. That's simply it. You want to get the ball to Leonard Fournette and that stable of running backs. You want to play, you know, less miles power football, and that's how LSU wears you out and wins it on defense. You know, that's what you want to do. That's how it fits the game plan. And then, you know, you may be able to hit these long play action passes or maybe these, you know, split bubble screens or whatever, but the one, I think this fits Harris well. And if there's an offense in the SEC today that a freshman can come in and start, you know, and, you know, relieve a guy that was the heir apparent starter from last year, even from that game against, I think it was Arkansas. I think this is the offense and this is the team. And not to mention, I mean, Auburn doesn't have the best pass defense or defense at all. So he may not have to do too much to win this game if the defense can contain Auburn's offense.
And the other thing you need to take into consideration is LSU's offensive line was really the strength that we all talked about going into the year.
Right.
I think it was exposed with Mississippi State. But Mississippi State, the one thing they do have is they've got 8 defensive men up front in rotation that are big bodies that are athletic and quick. They will not see another defensive front from a run-stopping capability that they actually saw in Mississippi State. That was very motivating. And probably LSU, you know, took a little bit of a probably didn't think that they were going to come in and get moved around like that. So I wouldn't count LSU out yet.
Let's spend one more segment here, or one more game, and look at one last game in the West, and that was Arkansas Texas A&M.
What a game!
Whew. Yeah,
it broke my heart to see that run. That was at a 54-yard run there in the fourth quarter. Get called back, they not score, and like 2 plays later, A&M throws another 7 points on them. So instead of being ahead by 21, now they're only up by 7. That was a deal breaker right there.
Yeah, I think what I took out of this was Arkansas's better. I mean, I think we got all say that they're going to line up 9 people. Get a hat on a hat. There's going to be a lot of creases. And, I mean, just a great game. I think both of them, I think Texas A&M was exposed some. As a Mississippi State fan, I was a little bit more excited about playing Texas A&M this week. if you can be, than I was before Saturday. So we'll see.
Yeah, let me throw this out there. I mean, obviously we knew that Alex Collins was good. We knew Jonathan Williams, kind of a respected guy coming into the season. But watching those running backs develop, and especially behind that developing offensive line, I'm a little scared from an Alabama standpoint. I mean, we haven't seen an offensive rushing attack, you know, like this. I mean, LSU a couple of years ago, but they were gashing Texas A&M. And I know Texas A&M doesn't have the greatest rush defense, but you look at them. I mean, look at that line. They showed a graphic on, you know, CBS that was, you know, they were like the heaviest line or would be in the top five in the NFL. I mean, they've got one of their tackles is 6'10", the other guy's 6'7". I mean, it reminds me of that line a couple of years ago from Alabama where all the players on there were, you know, eventual NFL-type guys. And it's kind of scary how good they are. They had some mistakes. They kind of, you know, shot themselves. That run called back. They had a couple holds. And to me, guys, they had that game won and let Texas A&M come back. I mean, they were dominating that game. They were keeping Kenny Hill off the field, keeping that, you know, Kevin Sumlin explosive offense off the field. They were doing everything you need to do to win the game, and they let it go at the end. And it was a heartbreak to do because I love seeing, you know, power offenses prevail. And, hey, I would love to see if they would have won that game, every single team in the SEC West would have been ranked, and I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nick, you got anything you want to add to that?
No, it was just an exciting game. I tell you, that's what makes football season so much fun is you never know what's going to happen. And smash mouth football versus almost like an air raid offense. And it was just a great game. As a fan that was pretty depressed after Vandy got smashed, it was pretty entertaining. I enjoyed it.
I think you guys led off and said a couple of really good points. And what it really says is that we did miss the boat. We're taking full responsibility for missing the boat on Texas A&M. But I think Arkansas did show and exploit a couple things that showed that Texas A&M may not be what everybody or what Texas A&M fans think they are. I could be way off base still. We'll find out. But, South Carolina, we'll talk about that here in just a second. They're not what we thought they were.
Spurrier's been trying to tell us.
He was honest. You know, it's the worst game he's ever seen for a win last week. Well, this week he had it in a loss.
I think the thing I took away from Texas A&M, which is really why I'm interested to watch this game on Saturday, they ran for 135 yards on Arkansas's rush defense. That made me. They were shut down in the running game, and Hill looked a little pedestrian for a lot in that game. And the thing about Arkansas is you knew that they're going to line up and run the ball on you. If I look at Mississippi State's scheme with Dak Prescott and that running game and that attack, I think there's a lot of gashes that can happen. So that's the thing I observed with Texas A&M is that they got that game in the end, but I think they struggled a little bit that we haven't seen this year.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the East now and talk about Spurrier, South Carolina.
Ooh.
Go on, Blair.
I saw it kind of unfolding there. I mean, when they didn't go for two, there was 6 minutes left to go in the game or something when they had a chance to. And, you know, I'm not a big chart guy. I never like to go for two until you definitely need to. But I thought in that scenario, I mean, the difference between 13 and 12 is not that big of a deal. I mean, so you're losing the ball game either way. So why not go for the 14? But, for as bad as the 30 play, for them to steal that, man, is just a heartbreaker. But it's kind of – isn't it kind of ironic that roles were reversed from last year and how South Carolina played so terrible for three quarters and then score all that in the fourth quarter to steal that game And then Missouri kind of did that, and now it really sets up the Missouri-Georgia here in a couple of weeks, you know, to kind of maybe make the East as kind of the headliner there.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting to me is that this is really becoming a Governor's Cup. I know preseason you heard Spurrier talk about how they're trying to fabricate a rivalry game because they both are in the cities of Columbia. Well, what they're doing on the field is making this a rivalry more than anything else that Mike Slive and the SEC guys down in Birmingham are trying to do from a marketing perspective. They're able to create it on the field now with each team going in and stealing a game from each other in a scenario where basically they put South Carolina out of any opportunity to run for the East and gave Missouri the track. I mean, with Georgia coming up in a couple weeks, it just opened that door wide open, and that makes that game really exciting a couple weeks down the road. So I know they've got Florida before that in a bye, I think, but you know, that's setting up to be something special when you start seeing that come rolling in, and you can already probably circle your calendar if things keep on this path that's a game day or at worst SEC Nation stop. On that Saturday when Arkansas and Georgia, I'm sorry, when Missouri and Georgia meet up.
And let me add this, guys. You know, obviously South Carolina has their own problems, but going back to this, I think the story of the year is Georgia losing to South Carolina. Yeah. Because that's going to become their problem. You look at Missouri still in this. I mean, statistically, you look at the standings, Florida could still be in it. I mean, obviously that's not going to happen. But the way that they lost that game, it could play huge to Georgia because there's a lot less wiggle room. If I told you that South Carolina was going to dip and be out of the SEC East race essentially at the end of September, you would think, well, Georgia's going to have it clearly in hand. But they still got a lot of work to do, especially with their schedule.
Yeah, no, but, you know, you bring up Florida. Well, Missouri has Florida coming up, so it's in both of their hands. You know, if one of those two want to come up and try to steal the East, they both have the opportunity. And I talked about this on MissouriNet a couple weeks ago, is that Missouri gets to control their own destiny because they've got everybody's going to run through Missouri to determine the East all of a sudden. In this three-game stretch for Missouri, or it's a four-week stretch in total, but Missouri really gets their fate in their own hands. And they took care of game one this week, and I think they were not the better team until the end of the game, and then all of a sudden Matty Mock showed up and came from nowhere and put up some terrific numbers there at the end. Anything else we want to say about that game? All right. I don't want to talk about Tennessee, but, you know, you got to give those guys a little bit east of here some props. That defense is starting to come together. The offense, you know, Worley leaving that – he leave the third quarter with the elbow, then came back in the fourth quarter.
That's the story of the game, man.
Yeah. If he
doesn't miss those three possessions, I think they win that ball game. Because I don't think they're in a scenario where I don't think they're in a scenario where George is punting, pinning them inside the one, because I think they get productive – and flip the field on a couple of those possessions because, you know, I mean, Worley stays healthy. Tennessee's going to win some ball games. It's just flat out it, man. I hate to say it to him, man.
Yeah,
but I think it's this Saturday.
And I think just to point to what Tennessee is, you know, we kind of have said, especially in the preseason previews, I haven't been here in a couple weeks, but we've always said that Tennessee's a year or two out under Coach Jones. You think about all the young talent they have. I think they had 25 plus, you know, freshmen that have played already, which is kind of crazy. But they're developing already, just like Shane said. That defense is coming together. The offensive line, we talked about it, replacing offensive and defensive lines. They look pretty decent in Worley, if he can develop into a guy that can, you know, win in pressure situations like I think he would have if he would have been able to stay in the game, they're going to be a dangerous team, especially if you look at, you know, playing Alabama later in the season. I mean, they don't really have a shot in the East, but they could definitely, you know, mess some things up when it comes to these West teams and the remaining East games that they have.
Yeah, it's not what I want to hear from the camp out in Knoxville, but it's and they're headed in the right direction. And I loved the picture of just my own solace here. Did you all see that picture of Peyton Manning after the game?
No, I didn't.
Head bowed down, sitting down like close to his knees, just the disappointment of that loss. You saw him feel it right along with the players. You know, he was there at the game, and you know, as a person that doesn't like Tennessee, it's always good to see that it affects them that way. Because it brings a smile to my face.
I like it.
But it scares me for the game that we've got with them coming down the pipe. So let's take a quick look at some of the stuff we've got coming up, because for all the talk we've had for the last hour almost, this week's slate of games is better than last week's. And there might be fewer games, but every game is an incredible matchup. I mean, you've got one, two.
I think it's the biggest weekend in the West ever.
Well, you've got all six of the ranked, six of the seven ranked teams. Is that right?
Yeah, all six of the ranked in the top 15 all play each other.
Yeah, six of the seven, because Arkansas's others receiving votes. Yeah. So,
and five of them are undefeated.
And on top of that, Tennessee's got Florida. That's a big game for those two programs. Huge game for those two programs because, you know, Tennessee setting 0-1, Florida setting 1-1 after the win with Kentucky in the SEC. You know, this is a game that both of these teams, Muschamp needs for his job. Tennessee needs to continue to show that they're on the right swing up. That's just going to be a really good game to look at.
Too bad it's going to be opposite of my Texas A&M state game with the stupid 11 o'clock ESPN time slot last week and then this coming up week. But, you know, I take a look at this. Was Tennessee lost 9 in a row to Florida? I believe that's right. But anyway, yeah. But everything is pointing to Tennessee kind of breaking that streak. And they always do something really stupid in the Florida game. So I don't know which way to go. But you would think that they've really made some momentum. Worley's better than what we thought he was going to be. They're really a passing team if they actually are able to work around their protection issues on the offensive line and throw the football to open up the run. That's typically when they have their success. So,
well, think of Muschamp had Brissett still after his performance with NC State against Florida State. What this game would be now?
Well, I mean, it only took like until 2 weeks ago for everybody to finally get off Driscoll's bandwagon. That five-star rode in for 3 years. So, but I just think, I'm anxious to see how Florida looks after 2 weeks. And then what Tennessee does after that game. So it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, and then Vanderbilt, Georgia, there's not a lot to talk about there, I don't think. Nick had to hop off. But, you know, this is a game where Georgia has to show some improvement off of the Tennessee game. You know, it's a great opportunity because it's Vanderbilt. I think to really show that they're in the right direction and they're making improvement, Georgia – that is, they really need to come in and win, you know, at least by two touchdowns against Vanderbilt. It's going to be at Athens, so I don't see any reason why that shouldn't happen. But for Vanderbilt, that puts them to 0-4 already in the SEC, and in a really, really bad way, I think.
Yeah, I think Georgia, you know, for me, is they got to take all the shackles off of Hudson Mason. They've tried to kind of manage him. First of all, I think they should never throw a four. They should just run it every time because they get a 9 bazillion yards. But
we didn't even talk about that hurdle play that Gurley did.
Yeah, I mean, he's a freak. But the, you know, the weird thing is that he's never been a guy that carries the load 25 times a game for four games in a row. He's never done it in his career. And, you know, so I think the problem with them is that they have a place in that they just it's kind of holding too tight. They just need to let him go, let him try to swing it around the yard and see if he can get better. Because right now he's struggling. Well, they and then their defense can stop it. And he'll stop Vanderbilt because Vanderbilt's terrible, but they really can't stop anybody.
Didn't they let him loose a little bit in week four? I forgot who they played. They went like 63-7 or something.
Yeah, but that was whoever that was.
It was
Stetson or somebody.
I'm pulling it up now. Troy, 66-0.
Man, Troy is bad. How did Troy just get terrible in 2 years? Yeah. Anyway, that's a different call for a different day. But I think that's enough of Georgia and Vandy. You got anything to add there, Nick?
Not really at all. I think that's good enough.
I take that back. Hutchin Mason was only 8 of 11, so he didn't play very much. I forgot they took him out early on that game and gave the other quarterback some reps there. So that leads us up to the South Carolina-Kentucky game. They're headed up to Lexington, the Commonwealth, for the second home game in a row for Kentucky. South Carolina's got to be licking its wounds. They've got to try to make a respectable showing. Kentucky needs – I mean, we were talking about it before this. You know, last night Kentucky – UK was on lockdown because they heard shots fired. Come to find out it might have been four freshmen from Kentucky that are now – suspended at least from this upcoming Saturday's game, and one of them is Stanley Boone William, who happens to lead Kentucky in all-purpose yards right now through the first four games. So it's lovely to have somebody like that that's so fast, that's such an impact player. That's I mean, he was electrifying when he caught the ball, when he got the ball, when he whatever they did with him, he got him. They used him in so many different ways, and it's going to be. You know, that's not the type of person you want to see setting out a game. It's a little bit like your offensive lineman or your center. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, this is what my thoughts are, Shane, on this. I've watched probably more South Carolina games than you guys have watched in the last freaking 6 years with a brother-in-law that's a diehard South Carolina fan. So the last 3 years, they've won 11 games. But the big thing about South Carolina that you could always say is that they were pretty mentally tough. You know, they always, you know, especially with Connor Shaw the last 2 years, they just had this mentality that was, you know, that adversity didn't cause issues. They are not mentally tough. You saw that the other night where they're just a real finesse team. They have got really, really talented players on the back end in defense. They have not played a lick of college football, and Texas A&M just exposed them. And that's what other teams have done. Georgia, you know, as good as Georgia is on the offensive side, they just, you know, they let South Carolina just run through them. So I think this is a good matchup for Kentucky. This is what I look at. Kentucky is going to get a game that they are absolutely not supposed to win. It's going to happen. It's going to break through. I hope to God it's not Mississippi State, because that's probably what it's going to lead up to do. That's my one thing now that's like my mantra is I don't want to be the win that Kentucky gets. But I think this is
Vanderbilt
really
broke
good
that. Vanderbilt broke that, so you don't have to worry about it.
Well, I think the – no, but I mean, I'm talking about y'all actually getting a legitimate, upsetting somebody that's going to be you know, because I have a feeling if State won the next couple of games, we're going to be fighting like dogs against Kentucky to squeak out a win. But the whole thing is South Carolina, with Kentucky's passing game, they can attack them. But Kentucky's got a pretty good defense. And South Carolina did not play well at Vanderbilt. They have not played well away from their home. I mean, So I think it's just one of those things that's
yeah, but they're two losses. But they're two losses that came at home.
Yeah, but about they played Georgia at home, right? Or did they play them on the road?
They played. They lost to A&M at Columbia, and then they lost at.
No, but where did they beat Georgia? They beat them at home, though, right? All their freaking games have been at home except Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
but they're both of their losses. Both of their losses came at home too.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But I mean, I think the one game where I said they went to Vanderbilt and did not play well, and we've all seen that Vanderbilt's not very good. And so going to a place, I think Kentucky's going to be a much tougher place. It's at night. They're going to be all bourboned up from Keeneland, so it ought to be a good atmosphere. So I like Kentucky's chances in this one, man.
We got to fight. Kentucky's got a fighting chance to pull this one out. I don't know what the spread is on it, but
the spread is 5.5.
South Carolina.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a big number when you're thinking that it's at Commonwealth. So you give them the 3 points. Now you're at 8.5 on a neutral field. That's. That's not 17 we were given Vanderbilt. So now we're getting 5.5. It's something that can happen. With Kentucky, just like when they play most of the teams they're going to play this year, like when they played Florida, they're going to have to prove that they can beat these programs before I can sit here and truly say they're the favorite to win this game and everybody's not looking at them correctly. And we're still looking at them correctly. They're still the underdog coming into this game. Nick, you want to talk about the Alabama-Ole Miss game for a few minutes? What are you excited about? What are you scared about?
Oh, tell me everything, Nick. Just fill me up.
Last year, this is not going to make Blair happy, but this is one of my key games to watch. It was a game that I was extremely worried about. I think it was kind of Alabama's first big test, like it was this year. And, there was just so many things. I was kind of getting the idea that Alabama was a little complacent last year. Not to say I predicted the future, which was extremely unfortunate, but I was worried about, because Alabama always has an issue with these up-tempo spread teams, and we've talked about how Ole Miss can be, with Hugh Freeze, if they're one of, if they're rolling, can be one of the faster teams in the SEC besides Auburn and Texas A&M, of course. And then I looked like an idiot because Ole Miss comes in here, probably one of the top five games I've been to crowd-wise at Alabama, especially a non-LSU or Auburn game. The crowd was just really into it at Bryant-Denny Stadium. I mean, it was one of the loudest things I've heard, like I said, outside of a huge game at Bryant-Denny Stadium when Alabama got that sack of Bill Wallace, I think it was, and got the safety. Alabama ends up winning 25-0. No contest whatsoever. I mean, I think Bill Wallace, he didn't throw an interception, which was kind of surprising to me, but I think he only had like 125, 130 yards. The offense never got rolling for Ole Miss. And, this is a game, it's kind of the same way this year. It feels like a trap game a little bit. Alabama, their first game, Blake Sims' first test in the SEC, and it's kind of funny. I haven't been on the podcast since Blake Sims has become like this dark horse Heisman guy when we were saying, oh, Jacob Coker eventually going to come out and beat him out. And next thing we know, Blake Sims is throwing 200 yards passing to
he's going to have
Cooper up in the air and looks like Tom Brady. Well, not tonight, not Tom Brady, but like Peyton Manning or something out there. So I don't know. It's kind of hard for what I can think about this. And I tweeted this out. It's kind of funny, but Blake Sims' stat line for 2011, last time Alabama played at Vaught Hemingway, which is kind of weird, different. When we added Texas A&M, Alabama got two home games against Ole Miss, which was kind of weird, but. Blake Sims, 5 carries, 74 yards against Ole Miss as a running back in 2011, and now he's going to be lining up under center. So that kind of tells the story of Alabama. It's kind of funny, but I don't know. 6-point line, which, giving them the 3 points, obviously, for being at home. But you look at it, this is the closest line, or I guess the smallest line Alabama's had since the LSU rematch in 2012 when Alabama was favored, I think it was like 2.5. And that was also the last time that Alabama was, I think that was the last. Alabama's gone since the 09 national or SEC championship against Tebow, where they've been the favorite, you know, the line favorite, which is kind of weird to think about. But yeah. I don't know. This is a line that seems kind of low to me. I mean, it seems I would expect Alabama to almost be a double-digit favorite. I mean, I'm not being an Alabama homer. I'm just being obvious. But I think there is some credence on what Ole Miss, you know, what we believe Ole Miss can be with that developed talent. I mean, you look at, we've been telling you for years, you know, two or three years now with that recruiting class that they had with Treadwell and all these guys that they're going to, you know, step up and be a team that compete in the West. And I think, you know, whoever wins this game kind of sets themselves up to be a top two team in the West, especially with, you know, question marks. I mean, obviously it's way too early in the season to say that, but this is a must-win game for, you know, either of these teams to compete for the rest of the season in the West, especially with, you know, Mississippi State, Texas A&M, Auburn all on the schedule for these teams. So I don't know what to think about that. One thing I want to look at is Alabama's dominance up front. Alabama hasn't had the ability, you know, hasn't really needed to do it, but at the same time, it's been disconcerting to me under, you know, Kiffin that we haven't established kind of that power run game. And I would look at it. I mean, Alabama's got some first-time starters on the offensive line, and I don't think you have to have a run game to beat Ole Miss necessarily, but when it comes to these LSU games, I'm not actually sure Alabama's going to be able to pass for 500 yards or, you know, amass 600 yards and Blake Sims, you know, set records. So I don't know. There's some things I want to look at, but I want to get your take too. I mean, Ole Miss has a developing defense. They're playing better. You obviously got Cody Pruitt, the Kim Dichie brothers, those guys. But as much as I thought that, you know, Amari Cooper was going to be shut down against Florida with Vernon Hargraves, he looks like an animal out there. And I'm not, I mean, I'm just not going to lie to you guys. I don't know anybody that can check Amari Cooper right now. And if you double team him, Alabama's got more weapons than they've ever had before out in space. And Lane Kiffin's going to beat you in a different way. So that's the scary thing if you're an Ole Miss fan. And I don't know. It's an interesting game to me. Ole Miss is, you know, game day is going to be there. Ole Miss is in the top 15 for the first time in years when they've played Alabama. So definitely a lot of storylines coming into this one. And like I said, it's going to depend on, in my opinion, which Bo Wallace shows up. I mean, if he goes out and throws for 300 yards and three touchdowns, Alabama might be staring a loss in the, a loss in the face.
Blair, but I'll let you go in just a second. I want to follow up with a couple questions real quick, Nick. Nick, a couple questions for you real quick, and a observation. Dark horse Heisman. You know that the person that would be in front of him as a dark horse candidate is Amari Cooper. So that would be a very, very, very dark horse at this point. But to take that, not to take that away from what Blake Sims has done on the field, the other question I have is that, you know, I'm a little surprised that the line is where it is like you are, for the simple fact that you look at Ole Miss and who they've played the first four games, they've not really been tested. And you look at Alabama, you know, they had West Virginia, and they've had some tough matchups in this stretch of four games that they've had, and they're actually, you know, so impressive in such a way that they are now the number one in the coaches' poll. You know, so they're, somebody thinks that they're doing things right. For them to be the number one team in the coaches' poll and only be less than a touchdown against Ole Miss, who's not been tested yet, and we saw them have trouble against a Memphis program, that to me is a little concerning, because how does Vegas know these things? Something's weird with that to me. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, I haven't got your opinion, and we talked about it preseason, how Lane Kiffin can possibly be a difference maker. And we really saw that last week. He's gotten a ton of praise outside of the SEC, with a lot of media folks saying, you know, he's getting plays designed so that Amari Cooper is in space and is able to get open.
Yeah, and that's something Saban has talked about, you know, more times than not, especially last week. He was talking about how the media grilled him for this hire, and what he was saying is, you know, there's few, you know, pro guys to start out with anyway that he could hire, but the thing that he really admired about Lane Kiffin was his ability to pick a player and use his talents to the best of his ability, and that's something Saban's really good at. And this comparison's great, and it's not something that I came up with. I'm sure the guy that I heard it from didn't come up with it either. But Amari Cooper is a almost exact duplicate of what Lane Kiffin did with Marquise Lee, except he might be a little faster. And that's crazy to think about, and we didn't get to see those numbers near as much as the West Coast guys did. But Marquise Lee went out there, and he was almost guaranteed 100 yards. It didn't matter who covered him, who you lined up against him. Lane Kiffin was going to find a way to put the ball in his hands, and that's how USC ended up winning games back then. They didn't have near as much talent as they did in the 05, 06 Reggie Bush years and stuff. So that's really interesting to me. Shane, another reason I just thought of this, why the line might be a little lower than what we think. It may speak to Vegas's distrust in Alabama's defense, and I think that is something that really hasn't been tested. I mean, Florida just had a horrible day. You could chalk that up for a win for the defense, and obviously all their touchdowns came off mistakes by Alabama, but there was a lot of gaping holes in that West Virginia game. And although that wide receiver White and Trickett is a good quarterback, White could be an All-American, their wide receiver that scorched Alabama in that game. But there's a lot of things happening. Nick Perry was suspended last week for a targeting foul, ended up not hardly even seeing the field. And I don't know if they're going to stick with this, but Alabama, I don't think Tony Brown started, but he saw a ton of playing time against some of Florida's number one talent last week, even lining up against who's their number one receiver, Robinson, I think it is, who had just an amazing day coming into the Alabama game. And Tony Brown's a true freshman, and there is a lot of question marks coming into the season about his development. When would he hit the field? So that may be it, and it scares me a little bit. I mean, our best cornerback play-wise right now is Cyrus Jones, who's a converted wide receiver, who's about my height, about 5'8", and although he may have the DB skills, he's just not going to be able to check Treadwell. So those question marks in the secondary is something Alabama hasn't faced in the past couple of years, so that might be why there's this line that's a lot lower than what we expect.
That's why we have you on. Blair, now, take off.
Well, I think there's a couple things I look at. Ole Miss's defense is getting all the pub because they're number one in the SEC. I think they give up like 234 yards a game. Here's a key stat, and the only reason I know this is because I follow Mississippi State, and Mississippi State's in the same category. Alabama and Mississippi State are one of only three other teams. I think there's three total teams. I think Baylor's the other one that have actually had five consecutive games of over 500 yards of offense. Alabama's actually had five consecutive games of over 587. So when you think of Alabama, you don't think of rolling up 600 yards of offense. That's what they're actually doing. And what I saw in the Florida game really scared the ever-living crap out of me from an Alabama standpoint, because it's all Americans on the edge, it's all Americans in the backfield, and now all of a sudden you have a quarterback that they're actually using appropriately that can score so that your defense doesn't have to hold you to 13 points. And so what I actually see in this is Ole Miss is one-dimensional. They can say that they got a running game, but in the four games that they play, they should have a running game that's dominant. It's not. They have offensive line issues. Alabama will probably get some pressure on Bo Wallace. If you make him go through extra reads, it's going to be an issue for him. And I think Alabama's offense is going to I think it's just going to wear them down. So I could see why the line. The other thing is in Shane, that this line is probably low, is that Ole Miss has 10 or 11 interceptions on the back end. They lead the nation, I think, in interceptions from that standpoint. So that's the way that I look at this. And also, guys, they have been asking for game day for like a decade. If you don't understand what game day is going to mean in Oxford, it is going to be a complete 6 days worth of distractions. It's not even going to be funny. So I think because Oxford, it's all about an image, it's all about a portrayal, it is going to be very, very difficult, and I think that's a big disadvantage for Ole Miss leading into this week, is that they've got the whole world watching them, and they had the whole world basically sitting there watching them play Memphis and their showing. So You know, that's my take on it. I think it's going to be difficult. You also got to take into consideration that you've got Nick Saban and Kiffin have got an extra week. So they've been looking at this, you know, for 2 weeks. I just think they got too many weapons. And I think you can run the ball on Ole Miss if you just hit them in the mouth. I'd like to see somebody hit them in the mouth and see how they react. Because they're more of a, you know, they're more of a side-to-side fast defense and a really attacking back secondary. And so I'll just be interested to see how this game turns out. I give Alabama, I think it's going to be a 14-point win. That's just me. That means, and I'm totally biased.
Let me stick with you.
I hope it's down 31 points.
Let me stick with you, and you talk Auburn LSU for me for a minute.
You know, this is an intriguing game, guys. You know, Auburn is sitting there, what, number 5 in the country, undefeated. Yeah, played Arkansas at the very beginning, had a tough time in the first half. Absolutely nobody's talking about. Even the clowns that actually say stuff on our podcast that we don't give them any love, that no Auburn fan actually wants to show up and talk about them. So it's one of those things where nobody's really talking about Auburn. And to be honest with you, I don't really know how good they are. The intriguing thing is this Harris thing at quarterback with LSU. I think LSU going on the road, I think this is the place where could be interesting to see how this turns out. I think they do have a spark with this kid. I think he gives them an extra dimension that they actually have not had. He can get outside the pocket and create some things. He's an excellent passer. He's got nice touch. I think he's a pretty accurate kid. So I'll be interested to see how this game turns out, because I think LSU can move the ball on them. And when you can move the ball on Auburn, it's how many times can you stop them? I think this is going to be a toss-up. What's the spread in this game?
It is Auburn by 8.
Yeah, see, that seems high to me. But, you know, Auburn can roll them up, and, yeah, next thing you know, it's a 21-point game. But, you know, Les Miles, he's just a guy, man, that just, you know, he always gets that thing back on course. And it's just one of those things where I'm just saying, man, I just don't want to quit on them just yet. I mean, we exposed them. They look really bad. But, man, that quarterback play that they had, I mean, I actually went back and watched that game for the first time 3 days ago. And, I mean, Jennings, dude, he had on 3rd and 10s crossing routes where he was short hopping them to him. I mean, wide open guys. I mean, they should be complete passes if you could actually throw a football. You know, so this Harris kid was actually putting the ball, you know, where it needed to be. So really, really intriguing game.
And this doesn't – I mean, it's a big game for LSU, even though they're traveling to Auburn. I mean, they're not out of the West, even though they lost to Mississippi State. You know, there's easily – I don't know if there's going to be a team in the West that's going to come out undefeated. So they have a lot to play for, and Auburn can still come away with a loss here. So I know when we picked it early, did our preseason looks at this, I know I picked LSU to win this game, and I still think they can come into Auburn and do that. I like what you said, the fact that we really haven't seen what Auburn is. You know, that first half, Arkansas played Auburn really well. They came out, they had, a two-hour rain delay or something ridiculous like that. They had basically all the time in the world to replan, game plan for a whole other team, and they did that, and Arkansas wasn't ready for that. It's a different Arkansas program today than it was when they played each other. So after that, you don't know what Auburn has, what they've been able to do with inferior teams that they've played. You're right. It's one of those where we just don't know yet. We've got some ideas, and I'm curious to see what happens.
And the other thing, Shane, that put in here, you know, the Jeremy Johnson and the Nick Marshall thing, I'm interested how that plays out through the year, because the Johnson kid did so well in that first game that I think it's put pressure for them to both play.
Yeah.
And how is that going to work when they get into these games against LSU? I mean, La Tech, I mean, the kid gets in there really early in the game. And so it is a different changeup for the style of quarterbacks that they are. But I'm just really interested to see. I think, you know, it's just, man, I just want to see how Auburn's – I want to see how their luck turns out.
That's awesome that you say that. You look at Marshall, he's thrown 73 attempts for 548 yards, barely over 50%. Johnson's only thrown 25 passes, 76% completion, yeah. 330 yards.
Yeah.
And let me add this, guys. You know, we've talked about this, and I think Britton actually hit on it last week, is Auburn has not been able to dominate the trenches like they did last year. They lost Jay Pross. They lost Robinson. They've lost the left guard, I think it was, earlier in the season to an injury, and he's out for the year. So if you cannot dominate, and that's the thing I'm going to look at in this game, this is a big-time SEC West matchup. You've got a dominant defense, you know, in the past coming in there. LSU's built on defense. If Auburn cannot run the ball, I think that puts even more pressure on the coaching staff to play more of Jeremy Johnson, because you've got two guys that could be great wide receivers in Sammy Coates, an all-SEC guy, and Duke Williams, a guy that has shown some flashes, even with a subpar quarterback, of being a great wide receiver on the outside. And if you've got a guy back there, all the things that Nick Marshall brings, you know, the 4.3, 4.4 speed, the great option guy, the great reads that he makes. But if he can't get the ball to those playmakers and you're getting stonewalled at the line in the rush attack, you've got to put a guy like Jeremy Johnson in there who's a great passer. I saw him in high school. He's a great passer. I mean, he's a much better, much developed quarterback, you know, in a normal system. I don't know if he's a better Malzahn quarterback, but if you add that passing attack in there, it may be Auburn's only chance of winning the West is maybe not going to a Jeremy Johnson run offense, but at least playing him more.
All right, let's look at this last matchup, and I saved it for last on purpose. Ole Miss is not the only Mississippi team hosting a zoo this week for college football. SEC Nation's going to be at Starkville to have Mississippi State host Texas A&M. Blair, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, just coming from the state of Mississippi, it's actually pretty interesting that, you know, the whole college football world's going to have their eyes on those two games down there. I mean, you're talking about, what, number 12 playing number 6, number 1, or number 3 in AP playing number 10?
Three and 11.
So it's pretty interesting that both ESPN games are going to be there. I think it's the first time that Mississippi State and Ole Miss are ranked in the top 15 since 1958, where they'll actually play. And then I think it's the first time that they'll actually both play in a top 15 matchup.
I saw Chuck Dunlap from SEC help get that information out. And I think Mississippi State was 1-0, and Ole Miss was 2-0.
Yeah.
For that ranking.
Yeah, it's for them, you know, if we go straight to the game, I mean, you know, I think the important piece is I really want to see how our cornerback play is opposite of Tevez Calhoun, who basically nobody's thrown on this year at all. It's been mostly the Jamerson Love, Will Redmond substitutions that we've had a little bit of breakdown on the defensive side of the ball. I'm anxious to see. I'm anxious just to see what Mullen and them got. We got 2 weeks to prepare for this game. I think Texas A&M, if you guys remember last year's 51-41 ball game, and really Mullen sat there last year and said, "Hey, we came in wanting to stop the run, and we did. And you've got a guy back there that's a magician that basically can run around and escape, and he made" more plays than we did, and we lost the ball game 51-41. That was a game last year where they couldn't stop Dak Prescott. And although they are, you know, they were 109th in passing or 109th in total yards given up, and now they're like 40th in the country. I think our scheme is better this year. I think Robinson adds a new dimension at running back. and you saw how we gashed the LSU defense for 302 yards. I think LSU's defense is better than Texas A&M. That's just my personal opinion. We should be able to run the football and dominate on an offensive side of the ball. Now, the kicker is how many times can we actually stop the ball on the other end? And that's really where I'm. That's really where I want to be, because if you watch the LSU game, Mississippi State was the dominant team on the line of scrimmage on both sides of it. Question coming into it is we don't have Dylan Day from the landing incident. Stomping, I don't understand how you come up with stomping. This is a whole other topic for another day. We didn't get to talk about it the other day, and I'm still pissed off about it. It's a bunch of BS, but anyway. But so all we're actually doing is just moving over Ben Beckwith, who was the offensive lineman of the week against the LSU. He's moving over to the center spot, and we're actually rolling in Jamal Claiborne, who basically started 10 games last year at guard and just hadn't been able to break behind Beckwith to start with. So I feel pretty confident that we're not really going to miss much of a beat from that standpoint. You know, and it's just one of those things you kind of got to deal with. But this is a big moment, and I'm looking forward to it because I think we match up with Texas A&M, and they've kind of taken us out to the woodshed the last 2 years. I think defensively, Jeff Collins is going to have something over 2 weeks that we're going to be able to show from a scheme-wise that, you know, we should make it difficult for them. But I really think it's going to be it's going to be a high-scoring ball game, man. Just take the over.
Nick, anything you want to add?
Not really. I mean, this is we talk about how great Mississippi State's defense has been and dominating the line of scrimmage. I think that's a really, key thing to talk about, Blair. But one of the things that I'm going to be looking for is, essentially against Texas A&M, you've just got to get more stops, on defense. You've just got to stop them more times than you beat them. And as bad as that sounds, that's how Alabama's had to play them the past couple years, with Johnny Manziel, is you got to take something away. Alabama focused on taking, Manziel's run attack away last year. It ended up working, but it was such a close game, and it's a knockdown, drag-out fight. And Texas A&M's defense is not proving to me that they're going to be able to stop Dak Prescott, but at the same time, you can't rely on that. You're going to have to stop, Texas A&M's weapons, and they still have them. I mean, Kennedy on the outside and Ricky Seals-Jones and just all these guys and their stable of running backs who have played well this year. I think Arkansas did a great job of, keeping them off the field, and that was the time that Arkansas looked like they could win the game, is until Texas A&M got the ball back. So it's going to be a great matchup. I think it's going to be, obviously, outside the Alabama game for me. There's just so much good college football on this week, and we had a taste of it last week, but enjoy it, SEC fans, because as Blair said, I don't have the numbers to back this up, but this is probably the best week in the SEC West, if not the SEC, for a Week 5, whatever it is, matchup. So it's definitely a special weekend. Enjoy it. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd add, guys, watching, the LSU game for the first time like 3 days ago, I don't know if y'all remember, but they open up the second half and Prescott fumbles the ball, cuts the game 17-10. And if you're a Mississippi State fan, I guarantee you, there was a collective 100,000 State fans across the world go, yep, there it is. That's it. It's over with. It was a good thing while it lasted. And Prescott just sat back and said, hey, it's my fault, man. So let's just line back up, and I'm just going to put it on my back and go. And he's a guy unlike, I actually had some, Cole Hodges has been on here before, Shane, with Ole Miss, and he was texting me because Dr. Bo was driving him crazy. There's a huge trust issue with Bo Wallace. There is no trust issue with Dak Prescott. Everybody has complete trust in the decision-making that he's going to make. And so that's where I'm really interested to see, because I think this is a game that he's had circled for a while. And I think this is a game, guys, that if Mississippi State wins and Auburn wins, game day might be forced to go back to Mississippi the next weekend. So we'll see how it works out.
Well, Nick, Nick kind of stole some of my thunder. I mean, if you want to talk about a great set of games, there's only six games in the SEC this week. But, man, every single one of them has something exciting about it. From a 11 o'clock Central Time Tennessee-Florida game, you've got the Texas A&M Mississippi State. I mean, this is a weekend where you really want to try to clear your calendar, get your extra honeydews done. Wake up early Saturday so you can get those last little bits done so you can get some extra time on the couch for some just tremendous football. And it's exciting that we get to sit here and talk about it every week. I can't wait till next Monday when we get to sit down and talk about this set of games that we just previewed because it's going to be a lot of exciting football. And with that, we're going to call this podcast done.